order. I'm sure that the folks will be right back, but we're pretty pressed for time today, so don't want to delay anymore. Today is Wednesday, March 6th. The time is 1:22 p.m. Members present at this time, Representative Chris Tuck, Representative Sarah Hannon, Representative Dave Tallarico, Representative Ivy Sponholz, Representative George Rauscher, Vice Chair Representative Hopkins, and myself, Representative Tarr. Please let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. If we could please ask folks to silence their cell phones, we'd appreciate that. Thank you to Ms. Debbie Tillinghast for doing our minutes. Appreciate that. And to our LIO moderator, thank you. We have two agenda items today. The first is a presentation on outdoor and adventure tourism and economic impacts. And we're going to hear from a few different speakers for that. That's going to be just 20 minutes. And then following that, we're going to hear SJR7, the endorsing Arctic, the Arctic leasing program. And at that time, we're going to have the sponsor introduce the resolution and then begin the public testimony. Testimony will be limited to 2 minutes. If we're unable to get through the public testimony this afternoon, we will recess the meeting until 6:30 p.m. So if we could please have our first presenters come forward. We are lucky to have with us today Lee Hart, the founder of Confluence, Nolan Clauda, the executive director, University of Alaska Center for Economic Development, and they are going to do this presentation. They have just 20 minutes to do this because of the other agenda item, and I think have timed it so that they're going to be able to fit that all in. But I think what we're going to do is their presentation, then some introductions, and then if we have time, we'll have a question or two at the end of that. So thank you. Our co-chair, Representative Lincoln, is back with us right now, as is Representative Rasmussen. Please begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Co-Chair Tarr and Co-Chair Lincoln. And thank you for the opportunity to talk to members of this committee. My name is Lee Hart. I'm a 20-year veteran of public relations, representing leading national and international brands in the outdoor, ski, adventure travel businesses. As tourism director for a small mountain and river town in Colorado, I won awards for branding campaigns, and I've spoken about adventure travel marketing at conferences from New York to Venezuela. Today, I'm speaking for the interests of more than 500 stakeholder businesses and allied organizations across the state who have a vested interest in the future of Alaska's outdoor recreation economy. Confluence, the coalition of the outdoor recreation industry sector, was incubated in Valdez. However, in December, I left Valdez and the adventure-focused nonprofit I founded there to focus 100% of my time building Confluence into an impactful statewide organization. The concept of coalescing around the idea of outdoor recreation as a powerful economic sector is gathering momentum statewide. Since this time a year ago, there have been many milestones. On September 20th, the Federal Bureau of Economic Analysis released the official numbers about the outdoor industry economic sector, $416 billion and 2.2% of GDP. That's bigger than the pharmaceutical industry and growing faster than any other sector and the U.S. economy overall. Around the same time, the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development and the University of Alaska released their report on Alaska-grown outdoor product manufacturers, including success stories and uniquely Alaskan user-inspired innovations. In January, the State Association of Public Health Professionals adopted a resolution recognizing the benefits of outdoor recreation to public health. We have eight leading state trails, community-based trails groups from around the state who have come together, put money in, combined their monies to talk about the value of the investment of outdoor recreation infrastructure, specifically winter and summer trails, public use cabins, and hut systems, and that report is due out later this spring. I invite you all to see the forest through the trees. Virtually every community economic development master plan in this state calls for greater outdoor recreation infrastructure development. Every year, grassroots trails and outdoor groups marshal thousands of hours of volunteer labor and build and maintain summer and winter trails. In the past 4 years, voters in Anchorage and the Mat-Su overwhelmingly voted in favor of taxing themselves in order to fund trail development and other recreation resources. Outdoor recreation has also proven its power to transform lives, including troubled youth and veterans recovering from the injuries of war. In a deep search on the internet, I found a statewide trails master plan that clearly demonstrates that since at least the year 2000, residents of this state have been clamoring for more close-to-home access to the amazing public lands and waterways that surround their communities. For these reasons, our efforts are garnering attention that has sparked interest and invitations to speak about this emerging sector at conferences as diverse as the Alaska Planners Association, Juneau Innovation Summit, the Alaska Municipal League, and the Alaska Travel Industry Association. There is broad-based bipartisan support for outdoor recreation at the federal level as well. In Congress, our own Senator Lisa Murkowski has championed greater investment in recreation development and catching up on deferred maintenance on our public lands. The landmark Natural Resources Management Act passed 92-8 in the Senate and 363-62 in the House. Today, you will hear from my colleagues who made the trip here to prove the value of our sector, hold on to ground that is invaluable to user-financed recreation, insist that the state do its part to keep federal funding support flowing that helps restore wildlife and sport fishing habitat, as well as build new trails for motorized and non-motorized users and all manner of outdoor recreation projects through the permanently reauthorized Land and Water Conservation Fund that was part of that Natural Resources Management Act recently passed by Congress. We also have sent a letter to the governor requesting ways to examine opportunities to open the door to new infrastructure and business opportunities in partnership with the state. To begin our presentation, I am thrilled to welcome Nolan Clauda, Executive Director of the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development. They are using this occasion to publicly unveil some very important information for the state.
Cool. Thank you, Leif. For the record, I'm Nolan Clauda. I'm the Director of the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development. So I want to thank the Chair, Representative Tarr, and Representative Lincoln, and the committee for a chance to speak with you all today. So our center has been working with a number of stakeholder groups and in partnership with the Department of Commerce, with the Division of Economic Development at the state, to study the issue, to look into what some of the hard numbers are as far as how outdoor recreation contributes to the state economy. And so, you know, we don't always think about outdoor rec as a sector, you know, of as an industry or a part of the economy. We tend to think about it for other reasons why, you know, it's recreation, it's leisure, it's fun, it's good for our health and so forth. But as a contributor to our economy, you know, we don't know as much about that. There's been a recent push in the last few years at the national level to define it better as an industry and to show how it contributes to U.S. economy overall. It's about a $400 billion industry that it contributes to U.S. gross domestic product, and that's been growing actually faster than the U.S. economy as a whole. But here in Alaska, you know, our economy follows a little bit different rhythms nationally. So our central effort in this study was to actually look at how many jobs are created as a result of outdoor recreation. And so we were able to find a way to estimate the amount of participation in a number of different activities. We have about 12 different activities that we use to define outdoor recreation, and they include things like hunting and fishing and hiking and non-motorized boats, motorized boats, ATVs, snow machining, a couple of other areas. And we figured out what the participation rates were in each of those and how much people spent on trips when they went and did those activities. And we used that to find that there was the number that we came up with there doing the analysis, $3.2 billion that's added to the state economy each year. That's the sales to businesses that are somehow servicing that sector. And that money circulates throughout the economy to create about 38,000 jobs total in Alaska, which is an impressive number for the state. That's to give you some perspective. That's around one job in 10 in the state of Alaska that is in some way tied to outdoor recreation. Our numbers looked at both the visitor piece and the resident piece. So if you've seen presentations about how much the visitor industry contributes, this overlaps with it somewhat. So we were impressed by that finding. In Alaska, we obviously have high rates of participation in outdoor activity. Some data we found shows that we are the leading state, tied with Montana, for participation, that we exceed the national average many times over. and as far as outdoor usage goes. But looking only at what gets spent by recreators is kind of a narrow view of outdoor recreation, too, because it contributes in other ways. And one important one is the way that it contributes to a quality of life that makes a place attractive to a potential workforce. And this is a pretty key aspect of how economic developers around the country are looking at outdoor recreation. You know, economic development increasingly is about attracting talent and keeping talent in your area. And if you look at what Alaska businesses are saying in surveys, they generally say that a shortage of talent is one of their major problems. Just the ability to hire workers at really any skill level that can fill the positions that they have. Most Alaska businesses will tell you that that's a persistent challenge. But at the same time, we do know that, you know, we're a state where most people who live in Alaska were not born in the state. We have about the highest rate of residents born somewhere else. And one of the reasons why people choose to live in Alaska, according to a survey done a few years ago at a UAF, was that opportunities for outdoor recreation was a reason that about 60% of Alaskans surveyed said as a reason to live in the state. And so it becomes one of our primary assets in that sense as a way to keep a skilled workforce and the businesses that need that workforce as well. Another aspect, we did a report a while ago, a few months back, talking about outdoor products. So products that are either made or that are designed here in Alaska, you know, by Alaska-based companies. And that includes some brands that are very prominent even outside of the state, and nationally and even globally, like 907 Fat Tire Bikes. You know, it, one of the pioneers in the fat tire bike movement, and a brand that is well known, well beyond Alaska. We have Alpaca Rafts that started in Alaska, and even though they're not still in the state, that's a company that actually kind of initiated the modern sport of pack rafting. And we've seen that other states like Idaho have been able to actually take the outdoor gear sector that's based in the state and find ways to elevate it in Idaho through shared marketing efforts. They have a Tested in Idaho program that kind of tries to raise the brand of Idaho-based companies through social media and through trade shows and brand ambassadors and some other efforts like that. And they use the slogan, if it works in Idaho, it works anywhere. And that feels like something that could be a little more authentic if it was talking about Alaska. So. In any case, there's lots more that I could say on the subject, but I think I want to, in the interest of time, keep things moving along. So,
great. Thank you. Thanks, Nolan. I'd like to introduce the committee to some of the members who are joining this delegation and give them just 1 minute each to introduce themselves and why they're connected to this effort.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today. I'm from Yakutat. My name is Rhonda Costin. I've been the planner for the City and Borough of Yakutat for the last 5 years. My field of study was outdoor recreation management at Oregon State way longer ago than I'm willing to admit. I started my career as a whitewater river guide in Oregon, moved on to the Forest Service, National Park Service, several private nonprofits, and then 20 years with the state of Alaska at Fish and Game. I've been lucky enough to get to live almost all of those years in locations everybody else comes to on vacation. Yakutat's well known as a sport fishing and surfing destination, and there are many other exciting outdoor opportunities in adventure outdoor recreation in our area that are less well known. Yakutat's the gateway community to the largest World Heritage Area on Earth, comprised of Wrangell St. Elias and Glacier Bay National Parks and Preserves, Kluane National Park, Tatshenshini Alsek in BC Parks, and it's surrounded by the Tongass National Forest. Economic development opportunities in remote rural communities can be few and far between. Developed recreation and improved visitor services will improve the quality of life for residents and encourage visitation to our area, resulting in improved small business development opportunities. Our goal is to extend the use of our current existing infrastructure, promoting Yakutat as an outdoor adventure destination. Outdoor recreation as an emerging economic driver opens up a world of future opportunities for our community. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Michelle Stevens, and I'm president of the Petersville Community Nonprofit at Petersville, Alaska. I'm here to ask the legislation to reinstate the Snow Track program. The Snow Track program is funded through a self-imposed user tax or snowmobile registration fee. The program is self-sustaining due to the reoccurring registration fees collected from DMV. It is a revenue-neutral program that the users asked for and fund out of their own registration dollars. The groomed trails systems help first responders to get to the backcountry in an expedient manner, thus helping the victim sooner and less likely to suffer loss of life or limb. The Snow Track program benefits all Alaskans and anyone who wants to enjoy all that Alaska has to offer in the winter. Snow Track saves lives, promotes safety, stimulates the economy, and creates jobs. I represent 16 clubs, 20 businesses, 39 lodges, 15 dealers, 10 dog mushing races, including the Iditarod, 24 snow machine events, and more than 60,000 registered snow machine owners.
Thank you to the committee to be able to speak to you. My name is Dan Kirkwood. I live in Juneau, Alaska. I'm the general manager of Pat Creek Bear Tours, which is a partnership between Kootsnawoo Incorporated, the corporation for the Village of Angoon, and Alaska Seaplanes. I'm also the co-chair of the Juneau Economic Development Council's Visitor Product Working Group. That's a working group that's been convened since 2011 to encourage cooperation between the Forest Service and the visitor industry to identify opportunities to address the needs. What I'd like to do today is just very briefly share some of the statistics of the visitor industry side of recreation, particularly for Southeast Alaska, where I operate my business. As many of you know, we continue to see large increases in the number of people coming to visit us here in Southeast Alaska, 1.3 million people coming on cruise ships alone. But air traffic also is up 15% between 2014 and 2017, according to Southeast Conference. Employment is up 12%. It's just 1,000 jobs in Southeast Alaska, and our earnings are up 23%. At the core of this is, of course, the world-famous and recognized brand of Alaska that is known worldwide without question. And that, at its core, are the recreational opportunities that we have on our public lands here in Alaska. Thank you very much.
Hi, folks. My name is Mike Hopper. I'm a lodge owner in the Alaska Range, a place called Lodge at Black Rapids. This is one of those opportunities you just heard the gentleman before me speak about what kind of resources we have potentially in this town for people to enjoy. Last summer, I organized a team of eight guys. We did a 110-mile trek across the Alaska Range, exploring the possibility of developing a through hike that other people could reproduce without risking their lives. I survived the first third of it. There's wondrous possibilities, folks, and this is a project. I hope to come back to you with a film later this month, a film and presentation. We'll try to let everybody apprise of it, and you can view it at your leisure. Thanks.
To wrap this up with a bow, we have a short video, and then that'll conclude our presentation.
also saying that they have vast, great spaces to enjoy. We have more infrastructure that we can brag about, then that may bring more people here.
Hunters are coming to Alaska and looking to hunt big and small game and do a lot of fishing, and it makes it really difficult for them to come to the state and spend money if they don't have access to public lands to recreate on. So putting an emphasis on public lands access and conservation would be critical to helping us grow the outdoor industry here in Alaska.
The hoops that we have to jump through to be permitted for certain things, they take extremely long, to the point where this year we missed our busiest time of the year due to a process that was supposed to take me 15 days, taking 45.
Outdoor recreation fuels jobs in not only guiding and outfitting and product, but also in manufacturing, finance, technology, tourism. And so we have seen time and again through multiple studies that when policymakers invest in outdoor infrastructure and ensuring access to public lands, that it comes back tenfold. We see good paying jobs, thriving economies, healthy communities, lower crime rates, overall a much healthier community.
I would hope that Alaska would want to get on board this train because it's leaving the station, and I hope for you right on time.
That was so good. Do you have any just wrap up comments? I think Representative Hopkins had a question. No? Okay. Because I was going to say we're right at the 20-minute mark. But thank you all so much for coming to join us. We're disappointed we couldn't have you do the full presentation, just the very abbreviated part. But for members, you should have a sheet that gives some information about Confluence, and then on the backside has the names of the individuals, Rhonda, Michelle, Dan, and Mike, that just spoke to us, and all of their contact information for follow-up. I wanted to stay at the lodge at Black Rapids this past summer when I drove past it, but I didn't get to. So another time. But thank you again so much, and hopefully we'll be able to continue this conversation. And just to emphasize again what Nolan presented on, these numbers, it's the first time ever that this industry is being counted so that we can put some numbers around it. And I think for us, looking forward for sustainable options to diversify and strengthen our economy, there's just unlimited opportunity. So in the midst of all these challenging budget conversations, you've made me really optimistic and excited. And so I just want to thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Our next item on the agenda is SJR 7. Again, for anybody who's listening in, I just want to give folks a heads up on how we're going to do this, because we have quite a number of individuals signed up at this time. So we'll try and take folks in the order in which you signed up. And we are finished up here at 3 p.m. today. If there are individuals who signed up by 2:30 p.m., so that we haven't reached quite the cutoff yet, but I think we said if you... Is that right? 2:30 or 1:30? 2:30. Okay, thank you. Signed up by 2:30 p.m. If there are still individuals wishing to testify, we'll recess the meeting and come back, at least I will, at 6:30 to continue the public testimony to make sure that all interested individuals are able to testify. So with that, if we could have the resolution sponsor, please introduce yourself and present. Thank you so much.
Chris Birch, State Senate, and sponsor resolution.
Trevor Fulton, staff to Senator Birch.
Well, first of all, thank you for the invitation to be here this afternoon. I would note this is a very familiar territory. I think I spent a good part of the last 2 years in here during last session. And I'm trying to look around, see if we got a red dog picture in here yet.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
good
yes we do. On loan.
Great. Well, thanks again for hearing our bill. Co-chairs and members of the committee, for the record, again, Chris Birch, State Senate, District M, thank you for the opportunity to present this resolution. We all know how important ANWR is for the future of Alaska. Its potential for vast stores of oil and natural gas could generate billions in revenue for state and local government, create thousands of good-paying jobs, and extend the life of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. With the recent action of Congress, we finally have a path forward for responsible development in a very small portion of the ANWR Coastal Plain. I introduce this resolution to encourage the Department of Interior to stay the course on a leasing program for ANWR and to serve as the legislature's comment on the draft EIS, which is open for public comment until March 13th, 1 week from today. This resolution steers clear of choosing any one of the four action alternatives outlined in that draft EIS and instead prefers to allow the responsible agency to make that decision based on sound science and informed by public comment. This resolution simply emphasizes what's important to Alaskans: responsible development that brings Alaskans the benefits of jobs and revenue while minimizing disturbance and protecting wildlife populations and the environment. I appreciate the committee's support for this important and timely resolution. And with that, I would like to turn the microphone over to our staff, Trevor Fulton, for a walkthrough of the resolution. Trevor?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, again for the record, Trevor Fulton, staff to Senator Birch. Although SDR 7 may seem like deja vu, I'm sure you've seen a similar version in the past, or some of you have. I'd like to start off by taking a minute to talk about how this resolution is indeed different from some of the previous versions of the ANWR resolution. With the passage of the 2017 Tax Act, after nearly 40 years of effort by Alaska's federal delegation and by the state, Congress finally authorized an oil and gas leasing program for ANWR. That congressional authorization of ANWR activity is at the heart of what makes this resolution different from previous versions. Rather than serving as an open letter to Congress urging them to open up ANWR, SGR 7 urges the executive branch, specifically the Department of the Interior, to stay the course on a leasing program. That's a point worth repeating. This resolution does not address Congress. It addresses specifically the Department of the Interior. And while DOI has the authority to implement a leasing program, it does not have the authority to enforce things like Alaska hire provisions or decide how royalties are split or do many of the other things we used to routinely ask of Congress in previous resolutions relating to ANWR. So that's what's different about this resolution. However, much of the rest remains the same. The whereases of this resolution continue to focus on the impressive oil and gas resources in ANWR, which is estimated at 7.7 billion barrels of oil and 7 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. The whereases also continue to highlight the potential benefits ANWR has to Alaska and to the rest of the country, including over $100 billion in state, federal, and local revenues, over 12,500 direct and indirect jobs at peak employment, increasing throughput and extending the life of taps, all while strengthening national security, bolstering the U.S. economy, and providing affordable energy. Like past versions, this resolution also highlights advances in oil field technology that have made development footprints a fraction of what they once were. A 50-year record of safe and responsible development on the North Slope, and a commitment to ensuring the health and productivity of the porcupine and central Arctic caribou herds, as well as widespread support for responsible development in the ANWR coastal plain by Alaskans in general and specifically by residents of the North Slope. An important final note, Madam Chair, is the primary goal of this resolution, and that is that it's intended to serve as the 31st Legislature's official comment on the Department of Interior's ANWR leasing program draft EIS. Public comment on that draft EIS closes in 1 week on March 13th. In order for this resolution to provide meaningful input on the draft EIS, it will have to make it through both bodies before that deadline. So time is of the essence. I appreciate the committee's time and would be happy to answer any questions relating to the resolution.
Thank you, Senator Birch and Trevor, for that presentation. Do we have any questions from the committee members? No? Okay, seeing no questions at this time, then we will transition into the public testimony. We have four invited guests that are going to start as we go into this. And I should double check those individuals. Just for anyone listening in, may have been given a little extra time in their testimony. So just so that's not confusing to any folks as we transition out of the invited testimony into the regular public testimony, sometimes we do make that offer available. So we will go ahead and start with these folks. The first individual I have on the list is Faith Martinow from the DNR Office of Project Management and Permit. Do we have? Okay, so Ms. Martinow, you are unmuted.
Thank you, Chairwoman Tarr.
If you would please state your name for the record, and then we'd love to hear your testimony.
For the record, this is Faith Martinow. I am, Martinow is M-A-R-T-I-N-E-A-U. And thank you, Chairwoman Tarr, and committee members for the opportunity to testify. Again, my name is Faith Martinow, and I'm the Executive Director for the Office of Project Management and Permitting in the Department of Natural Resources. I also lead the state of Alaska's participation as a cooperating agency in the development of an environmental impact statement for an oil and gas leasing program in the Coastal Plain. I'm calling today to voice DNR's support for Senate Joint Resolution Number 7, which requests that the Department of Interior Bureau of Land Management, or BLM, implement an oil and gas leasing program in the Coastal Plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, or ANWR. The long-debated question of whether oil and gas activity should take place within the Coastal Plain, which consists of the non-wilderness portion of the refuge, was settled with passage of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. The question with which we are now faced is how such activities should occur. The Department of Interior and BLM have taken the first steps toward implementation of an oil and gas leasing program in the Coastal Plain by initiating development of an EIS. Throughout the federal process, the state has contributed resources to help BLM assess the potential indirect impacts associated with the leasing program, and also to establish foundations for a scientifically driven permitting process for future oil and gas related activities. The state's cooperating agency team includes representatives from the divisions within DNR, as well as the Department of Fish and Game and Department of Environmental Conservation. The core team has also been assisted by the Department of Health and Social Services, Department of Law, and also the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. BLM recently published the draft EIS, which has been referred to in previous remarks, and reflects a suite of potential implementation strategies. These alternatives describe the areas that would be available for oil and gas leasing, as well as possible lease stipulations. The state cooperating agency team has reviewed and provided comments on the draft EIS, which we will be submitting to BLM as a single consolidated letter representing the state's collective interest and expertise. From DNR's perspective, it's critical that BLM develop and select an alternative that provides maximum flexibility to future decision makers, which would enable them to rely on new information, such as exploratory seismic data, and on the existing local, state, and federal permitting processes to facilitate responsible development, production, and also transportation of oil and gas resources to and from the Coastal Plain. We've specifically reached out to the North Slope Borough and some other North Slope organizations representing resident stakeholders to identify areas of alignment and possible partnerships. We've had several productive conversations to date about the alternatives presented in the draft EIS, and we're going to continue that dialogue as we very rapidly approach that March 13th deadline for submitting comments to BLM. I believe that SJR number 7 will really reinforce the importance of responsible oil and gas development to the state and really to all Alaskans, and hope that the final resolution includes a recommendation from the Alaska legislature to, once again, maximize flexibility for future decision makers as BLM is working to determine how best to implement an oil and gas leasing program in the Coastal Plain. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to comment, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Martinow. We really appreciate your testimony today. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing none, I think you're done for now, but if you stay on the line, there may be questions later. The second individual we have for invited testimony is Fenton Rexford. I see you online here, Mr. Rexford.
Okay, can you hear me?
Can hear you great. Please state your name, and we'd love to hear your testimony.
Okay, yes, my name is Fenton Rexford. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman Lincoln and Co-Chair Tarr, and also to the members of the committee. I really want to thank you for the opportunity to present my comments. Again, my name is Fenton Rexford. I come from the community of Koktovik on Barter Island, where I was born and raised, to speak to you on behalf of my people and myself. Just as a reminder, Cocktoe is the only community within the boundaries of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And most importantly, we are the only community within the 1002 Coastal Plain. First, before I begin, I would like to give you a short history of our land and our relationship with outside groups. As I was growing up, we considered our homeland to extend from the Continental Divide in the Brooks Range to the Arctic Ocean, from the Salwanish Tuk on the west, well into Canada to the east of us. Our tribe, Cocktoe Tribe, had over 23 million acres of land that we have inhabited, that we have used for hunting, fishing, reindeer herding, gathering, and raised our families on for over 11,000 years. However, then in the 1970s, the government took our 23 million acres and gave us back 92,000 acres around our village. The deal was that this land they gave us was locked up. We couldn't use it. No, it is part of the wildlife refuge. That's where the problem is. We were unable to access our native allotments in holdings, unable to access our traditional subsistence use hunting sites with three or four wheelers, because of the changes in the designation and policies of the lands in Anwar we called home for thousands of years. Today, we now live with extreme restrictions on how we can use our own land, the 92,000 acres. Now, today, some outside groups that do not call the Coastal Plain home want to increase the restrictions so tourists and environmentalists can enjoy the illusion that they are protecting the pristine original state. These people forget they are actually humans, people who live in the 1002 area, who can and want to coexist with responsible development and protect our indigenous lifestyle. People, all too often the national debate frames development and preservation as an, quote, either or argument, unquote, as if preservation cannot exist together. So within our Inupiaq community, we believe this is a false model and one that is ill-fitted to the realities of our existence. We do not need to choose between the long-held traditions that are our birthright and economic security that comes with oil and gas development of our resources, as long as that development is done responsibly and with concerns of the local communities in mind. Again, it needs to be heard with concerns of the local communities in mind. Ultimately, the Arctic is a region with an interest in striking a balance between environmental stewardship and economic growth. As Inupiaq, we maintain our traditional values, while our culture continues to evolve and adapt to the changing world around us. We are not an exhibit in a museum, nor should the land that we have survived and thrived on for centuries be locked away for the peace of mind of those from faraway places. This school of thought amounts to nothing more than green colonialism, land grabbing in the name of the environment. The Arctic is a vast, vibrant, and diverse area that comes with unique challenges, as well as huge opportunities to better the lives of our people who live in it. My people know that industry and wildlife can coexist based on our experience. We have strong confidence in our local government, the North Slope Boroughs, their ability to protect our natural wildlife, environment, and resources from adverse impact, particularly decisions are made after considering local input. That's the important part regarding subsistence resources as caribou. Responsible development in the coastal plain means my people will continue to have access to running water and flush toilets throughout the region. Responsible development means access to local schools, healthcare facilities, public safety, infrastructure, and flush toilets, things that people from the outside rural Alaska take for granted. And for many of my generation, the only option for school beyond the eighth grade was to attend Indian schools in the lower 48. Now we are able to provide our children with high school education at home on the North Slope. The Inupiat have always been able to adapt and embrace the opportunities we are given. We consider the resources on this land that provides us to be our greatest gift. We consider what comes from below the ground a symbol of a gift, just as important as the gift of the whales we catch, the caribou, and the berries we pick that we gather from our homeland. Folks, we consider this an opportunity if we all work together to meet the common goal of opening ANWR. You know, I oppose the governor's attempt or the state of Alaska's attempt to take away our property rights. It's outrageous. This is a prejudice legislation that the state has introduced regarding our right to levy a property tax. We have worked with the state of Alaska for years as a partner and want to continue that in ANWR, and that's going to be a long ways into the future. But how can we trust again after a ridiculous attack like this on the very people who call the region of the North Slope our home? Shame on you, Alaska, the governor, for forcing us to divide and choose. Years of good faith efforts, memorandum of understandings with you, joint agreement, and now we are fighting for our rights to exist as a local North Slope Board of Government, our local government, including our cities. I hope the legislature treats us like a partner going forward and not like a doormat or rubber stamp. Again, thank you very much for listening to me this afternoon. We have been fighting this issue for almost over 50 years for the right to develop our own lands. Our community, like many indigenous communities around Alaska and across America, has had so much taken from us. But now there's hope and opportunity for self-determination, and it has returned to the Cocteau Ute. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Rexford. Appreciate your testimony and sharing about your area. Does anybody have any questions for the testifier? Well, Mr. Rexford, I did just want to say that I'm considering my support or opposition to this resolution, and I just want you to know that I'm not thinking of it as some faraway outsider, but Anchorage is pretty far from you, but just that some of the statements, I think sometimes it seems that there's been false choices placed in front of our neighbors in more rural parts of the state. And I think just from my point of view, you know, the essential infrastructure you're talking about with water treatment, wastewater treatment, education, those are state responsibilities. They're constitutional responsibilities that the state should always feel obligated to make come true, and I don't think we've done our job on that. So I just wanted to share that perspective because I wouldn't want it to seem like that there were individuals who, like myself, who wanted to limit opportunity, but just that perspective that it seems that we haven't met our obligation for basic infrastructure in our rural communities.
I
thank you. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Our next individual is David Fowski on behalf of the North Slope Borough and Mayor Harry Brower. And I think DJ is on the line.
Hello, hello.
Please introduce yourself and go ahead.
For the record, Madam Chair, my name is DJ Fowski. I'm the Director of Government and External Affairs for the North Slope Borough, specifically Mayor Harry K. Brower Jr., who couldn't be on the line today as he's in New Ixit for borough business. I'd first like to thank both you, Madam Chair, and Co-Chair Lincoln for your efforts today. We also want to commend BLM, the Department of the Interior, namely my friend Joe Balash and Steve Wachowski. We greatly appreciated DOI's and BLM's frequent outreach and efforts in recent visits for our communities to discuss this planning process. Let me be clear, though, like my co-worker and friend Benton Rexford just said, and I don't, for the record, I also don't think it's fair to go after him. But our support of oil and gas development on the North Slope has always and still is contingent upon such activities providing and benefiting our residents. One of the primary ways our residents benefit from development is that through our ability to levy a property tax on oil and gas infrastructure. Taxation of property is an inherent power of local governments, necessary for self-determination. These tax revenues fund our borough, allowing us to employ many of our residents, provide crucial services, and offset the impacts of development on residents, wildlife, and the land. We're also a huge employer to local engineering firms based in Anchorage and Fairbanks and all over the state. Back to the annual resolution itself, I feel the Federal Tax Act provides considerable protection for ANWR in the form of 2,000 surface acre occupancy limitation. This greatly limits the potential footprint in ANWR as compared to the Prudhoe Bay area. In a sense, the Tax Act surface occupancy limitation is the first layer of protection for ANWR. The stipulations and required operating procedures are the second layer, and we believe industry should be afforded the chance to select areas with the highest potential within ANWR. ANWR has been sensationalized by people who live thousands of miles away, most of whom know nothing about the land, its people, or its history. The public has not been presented with accurate information concerning the environmental impacts of oil and gas development in ANWR. Based on past experience, we are confident that this endeavor will not significantly affect wildlife populations, the environment, or the health and subsistence lifestyle of our residents. The development at Prudhoe Bay, which began decades ago, was far vaster than what is proposed in ANWR today. This development was conducted with less environmental protection and inferior technology than what is currently used by the oil and gas industry today. Nevertheless, the development of Prudhoe Bay did not result in significant damage to the wildlife or the environment. It did not result in a downturn to the caribou herd populations. The extreme hazards predicted by environmental organizations at the time never manifested. There is no reason to believe development in ANWR with modern oil and gas technology and a restricted development footprint will cause significant harms to caribou or other wildlife populations. The lands and waters of ANWR have been sustained by the Inupiat for many generations. Our continued existence in ANWR is dependent upon the maintenance of its natural ecosystem. We could not support opening the coastal plain to leasing if it presented a serious threat to our way of life, the Arctic ecosystem, and its wildlife populations and our culture. The village of Kostovich is the only community located within the 19 million acre refuge. It's the only community located within 100 miles of the 1002 area coastal plain. Among concerned stakeholders, no one understands the controversy surrounding the development of the coastal plain better than its own residents, who have lived and subsisted on this land and its resources for thousands of years. They have a better understanding and dependence on the landscape and wildlife than other concerned parties, and thus have the greatest stake in preserving this area for future generations. Thus, the needs and concerns of local residents must be given greater consideration, in my opinion, in the decision-making process for ANWR than outside groups. Again, we want to reiterate our support of oil and gas development on the North Slope has always and is still contingent upon such activities providing and benefiting our residents. Our borough spans the entire North Slope of Alaska, Its jurisdiction stretches from the United States to the Canadian border across to the western border of Alaska. With a coastline that extends along the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas, the borough has built and maintained most of the public infrastructure and provides services to its eight communities, including education, health and social services, roads, water and sewer, and emergency services, including the Prudhoe Bay area. The mayor of the North Slope, Harry K. Brower, would also like to invite you all up to the North Slope this summer for the Kivgak celebration, which is to take place at the end of July, July 31st. It will also coincide with the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission's annual meeting within the state. Those invitations will be in the mail soon to all of you, your members, Madam Chair, and Co-Chair Lincoln. And again, I just appreciate your time today and to hear from, you know, especially people who actually live on the North Slope. And we thank the committee.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Falski. Do we have any questions from committee members? Okay, thank you again. Our final invited testimony is from Teresa M. She's the Senior Vice President of Resource Development at the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. And let's just see. Here we have her. Miss M? She dropped off. Okay, well, perhaps she's going to call back in. Just brief at ease. Mm-hmm. And come back on the record here, and perhaps Teresa M. will be calling us back. But because of the time limitation and the number of individuals signed up, we don't want to delay any longer. So just for any of the folks that are participating in the public testimony portion. Please note for anyone technology here in the room issue, but we have lost the last individual who was signed up for invited testimony. If that person joins us again, we're going to invite them to come back. But for now, then we will transition into the public testimony portion. Again, we said we would honor anyone who has signed up by 2:30 p.m. At this time, it does look like we have more individuals than we have time for with the 2 minutes allotted per person. So if you're an individual testifying, don't feel like you have to use the 2 minutes if your testimony wouldn't otherwise take that long, because that'll help us get more people through the queue. So with that, is Dave Harbor available? And let me just officially open the public testimony. Dave Harbor? Okay, he was signed up for testimony. If Mr. Harbor, it shows up as being at the Anchorage LAO, if he shows back up, we'll try and bring him back on. Carl Portman is next, if Carl is available. Okay, just 1 second. We're going to take a brief at ease. Are we for sure on the... Sounds like we might be having some technical difficulties with the connection to the Anchorage LIO. We're going to continue pursuing that while we go to Pete. Oh, okay. We'll go back to Teresa and finish up our invited testimony. Ms. M., if you could please go ahead and... state your name for the record and your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Co-Chair Lincoln. My name's Teresa M., and I'm with Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. I'm the Executive Vice President of Resource Regional Development for the company. And sorry about dropping. I'm calling you today from Koktovik, and which is the only community located in the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. I've been working with this community in regard to oil and gas leasing for several years, and I'm here this week to work with the community on their thoughts with respect to BLM's draft EIS to ensure that the community is engaged and involved in the process and to mitigate future impacts to their community while providing for economic growth. ASRC has ANCSA lands within the Coastal Plain along with the Koktovik Inupiat Corporation. We have 92,000 acres of land inside the Coastal Plain, and we've been working towards allowing oil and gas leasing for over 40 years. Now that the area is finally open, it's our goal to ensure leasing moves forward with respect to our culture, subsistence, and with Koktovik's economic needs in mind and incorporated into the leasing documents. It's important to ASRC and KIC that the BLM program moves forward to allow us to develop our own lands to fulfill the intent of ANCSA for us in the community. The federal lands are an extension of the native lands, and therefore, working closely with the community, the agency, the state of Alaska, the North Slope Borough, and others, we need to be closely aligned to ensure the most optimal goals for all parties while protecting the interests of the community. We are confident that oil and gas exploration can move forward in a manner that protects the wildlife and environment. The North Slope of Alaska has evolved with respect to oil and gas development and should be a gold standard for oil and gas with respect to other nations around the world. It will continue to evolve as ANWR moves forward to ensure that there are proper protections in place with respect to this particular region. We strongly encourage our elected officials in the state legislature to continue to support our efforts, and the state will be receiving 50% of the revenues the BLM may receive through oil and gas leasing. In light of the current budget deficit, leasing could provide a short-term boost to the state revenues with longer-term benefits coming to the state if production begins. Our state and region are dependent on oil and gas, and while we are looking for economic diversity both within our region and within the state, we haven't arrived at a solution that would provide sustainable funding for our communities and to provide for the services that we've heard about from prior testifiers. I want to thank you again for considering our viewpoint and to ask your committee to pass Senate Joint Resolution 7 to support the federal process and allow the federal process to move forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. M. We really appreciate your testimony. Does anyone have any questions for the testifier? Okay, thank you. We're glad you were able to rejoin the call.
Thank you. Sorry for that.
No problem. So we will go back then to the public testimony. I'm going to be timing folks. We have that 2-minute limit. I'm going to try to go back to the Anchorage LIO to see if that has been resolved. Dave Harbor, are you available? Dave Harbor or anyone at the Anchorage LIO? Okay, Anchorage LIO, we're trying to get you if you can hear us. So then let's go here to OffNet, Peter Nolan. Mr. Nolan available?
Thank you, Char. Excuse me. Thank you, Chair Tarr and committee members. My name is Pete Nolan. I'm with the Alaska Chamber. The Alaska Chamber is a nonprofit organization founded in 1953 whose members work to promote a positive business environment in Alaska. We have long supported resource development that is both done in a responsible manner and brings economic opportunities to Alaska and its residents. The Alaska Chamber strongly supports Senate Joint Resolution 7, which of course emphasizes the legislative support for allowing limited oil and gas activity within the non-wilderness coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Responsible oil and gas development in the small fraction of ANWR proposed for leasing will help ensure America's energy security for decades and allow Alaska and our nation as a whole to realize the benefits that come from expanding energy production in Alaska. While renewable energy is a growing part of America's energy portfolio, it is still projected to account for only a minority of American energy production in 2040. New oil and gas production will be required to power America's economy and serve as a bridge until renewable energy becomes the dominant energy source decades into the future. With that in mind, the Coastal Plain was specifically identified by Congress pursuant to Section 1002 of ANOCA for its potential for oil and natural gas resources. Oil and gas from the non-wilderness portion of the Coastal Plain is an important resource for meeting our nation's energy demand and achieving energy dominance. Again, with that in mind, I'd like to reiterate that the Alaska Chamber expresses strong support for SRJ 7, and we encourage the House Resources Committee to pass the resolution. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate your testimony, Mr. Nolan. Any questions for the testifier? Okay, thank you. Then we will keep going here. Next to KK Davis is what is on the sign-in sheet, calling in from Fairbanks.
Hello, thank you for inviting me into the testimony. This is KK Davis. I'm an Alaska resident since 1991. After spending the last 17 years at home raising my children, I have returned to UAF to study Arctic policy and the science behind the dramatic changes we are seeing in the Arctic climate. I am also an owner of a family business with many years of experience in wilderness guiding and canoeing instruction. You may know of Canoe Alaska, which now is primarily an outfitter for rentals, but very connected to the wild and scenic rivers and their use. My most immediate concern with SJR7 is how quickly BLM is moving the EIS process along. 10 years ago, I was up to speed with all the background on the coastal plains. I cannot quote these facts accurately as of today, but I do know that I rever an intact wilderness refuge from the interior of the designated area to the coastline. I always want to be a reminder that BLM has 22.1 million acres in the National Petroleum Reserve adjacent to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Please take this into consideration. I have a dream to explore the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and as things are changing at a truly alarming, alarming rate in the Arctic, I cannot imagine applying one more pressure to this space set aside as wilderness. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. We really appreciate your testimony. Do we have any questions from committee members for the testifier? Okay. Thank you again. The Anchorage LIO was moving to another room, and so I'm going to go back and see if I have them online yet. Is Dave Harbor available? Okay, we're going to keep going through. Brad Snow is the next individual signed up. Mr. Snow, are you available?
Hello, yes. My name is Brad Snow. Thank you, Madam Chair and Co-Chair Lincoln. Good afternoon, members of the legislature, the press, and concerned individuals. I've been a resident of Alaska since 1973 and of Fairbanks since 1983, spending 8 of those 10 years along the Yukon River in and around Eagle. During that time, I thought I'd inhabited the most beautiful place on Earth. I wasn't prepared for the overwhelming realization when in 1995, having signed on as a guide for Fairbanks Wilderness Travel Company, I first experienced the drainage of the Hulahula River and the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge, that some refer to as ANWR, and realized that I had been mistaken about the most beautiful place on Earth. The abundance of animals, the bird life, the unique scenery, and the lack of any discernible development blew me away. Some may argue that a few oil derricks won't spoil the beauty. I'd like to compare even one oil derrick or one support building to a spot of spaghetti sauce on an otherwise spotless white dress shirt. The rest of the shirt may still be white, but what's your boss going to notice? Others argue that the economic potential for drilling is best for Alaska. I would counter that endangering the livelihood of an entire group of Alaska residents, destroying the tourist potential of an entire section of our state, or losing the last place in our country where untouched wilderness on this scale is still accessible, is a misguided deal with the devil, not a bargain. My first visit to the Hula River was followed by 8 years of helping both world travelers and Alaskans experience the 1002 area, and watching their amazement and delight in its animals, waterfowl, and pristine beauty. Compromising this, as well as the traditional livelihood of its Alaska residents, for a few pieces of silver doesn't represent all Alaskans, just those for whom the silver will go to and be gone tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you. You were 2 minutes on the dot. Appreciate your testimony, Mr. Snow. Any questions for the testifier? Okay, thank you. We appreciate your testimony today. We're going to go next to Sylvia Panzarella.
Yes, thank you for hearing us.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Sylvia Panzarella, and I'm calling for myself and my husband, Marius Panzarella. We've lived in Alaska for almost 20 years now, first for many years in Kodiak, and then the last few in Anchorage. I'm calling to say that we strongly oppose drilling in Anwar for many of the same reasons stated earlier, including destruction of the last of the great wilderness and wildlife areas in this quickly shrinking world, along with subsistence issues and the cultural importance of this. However, one greatly overlooked reason not to drill is that it's a poor financial investment for the state. Even the oil companies are saying it would be more than 10 years before any production would be seen, and that's if oil is found. The world's moving away from fossil fuels, and 10 years from now, I don't know what will be going on, because you have China, who has already started a mass production of electric cars and solar panels, and here we are stuck in the attitudes of the 60s. So even Kodiak, where we lived for many years, it's 99.8% sustainable energy. 99.8, our great little Kodiak, this wind and water. And Kodiak, we can thank some forward-thinking, smart individuals who are looking to the future. So Governor Dunleavy's about to give away $345 million to the oil companies in the next 2 years, and that's at great expense to our senators and citizens. That's crazy. So an old saying goes that when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. So we need to remember our state motto, which is north to the future. It's not north to the past. So we need to get away from this dirty oil investment, which has gotten us into a lot of trouble, as our as everyone knows now. So,
Ms. Panzarella, I just need to ask you to wrap it up, because your 2 minutes has come and gone.
Oh, that was it.
Okay, all right, perfect. Glad we were able to get you in. Any questions for the testifier? Representative Rasmussen has one.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Panzarella. Can you please elaborate on the $345 million giveaway that you referenced from our governor to the oil companies?
Yes, I believe, I don't have my papers right in front of me, but it was stated that there was $100 million that was already set aside, and then there were so many million for this year and then for the next year. You're our representative, so I can get you those figures. I don't have them right in front of me, but that those were the figures.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we appreciate your testimony. We're going to continue on. I'm going to go to Dave Harbor, who's called in on his own because he was our first person signed up. Mr. Harbor.
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead.
Okay, well, I've got you on mute on my cell phone because now it works. Madam Chairman and members of the Resources Committee, it's a pleasure to be here. And I've just put away my written testimony. I've given it to staff because I'm mindful of the two-minute requirement. I believe that we're at a historical time right now, those of us on this side of the table and you on yours, because we follow many, many decades of Republican and Democrat governors and legislatures that have all agreed over the decades to support reasonable development of the 1002 area of Anwar. And furthermore, it follows up on the commitment that Senators Tsongas and Jackson made to Senator Stevens about proper development of the 1002 area, a promise that was kept in the early 1990s, but vetoed by a president. And then now we're approaching a time when the Congress has passed the 1002 area provision, and it's time to move forward. I have two major points to make to you. Number one, at this historical time, you on this committee and the House of Representatives is not alone. you're accompanied by those decades of those who preceded you in Alaska. But furthermore, you've got the whole country behind you. As a member of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, I served as chairman of the Western Conference of Public Service Commissioners and vice chairman of the National Commissioners Organization, the GAS Committee, and I was the official representative of that national committee to the Interstate Oil and Gas Compact Commission that is chaired by a sitting governor of an oil-producing state. During that period of time, I only justified travel for education and for getting resolutions of support to support Alaska's interests. And in working with the people, the commissioners, the IOGC, AOGCC, Commissioner Norman, Commissioner Seamount, Commissioner Forrester, we managed to get resolutions of support for ANWR both nationally with various organizations, including the Interstate Oil and Gas Compact Commission. We got a major study that is endorsed by the National Commission Organization and IOGCC to determine the loss to America of not developing these resources. And that had
Mr. Harbor?
A profound impact on national policy.
Mr. Harbor, I need to just cut you off because your 2 minutes has come and gone. If you want to just quickly wrap up, please.
Thank you for the opportunity to summarize. Then I'll just add one thing. If there were a recommendation, it would be that the great leaders of our legislature, of the Senate and the House, were to communicate in writing the result of a copy of this this nonpartisan resolution to the Congress's Speaker of the House and Majority Leader in the Senate. And
okay, that's
would also be providing them with
that's
follow-up
as much wrap up as
this is for the Department of Interior.
Thank you,
Madam Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Try not to talk over folks, but we got to move it along. So going to go back to the Anchorage LIO that's working now. At this point, we've gone past the cutoff point. So anyone who signed up to testify now is in the queue. Again, we're trying to get through by my calculation. If we go about 5 minutes over, we might be able to make everyone during this time frame. If not, again, we'll recess till 6:30. So just want to let that be known for anybody who has signed up right now. Next on the list is Carl Portman.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and the House Resources Committee. My name is Carl Portman, Deputy Director of the Resource Development Council, and I'm here today to speak in support of HJR 7. RDC has consistently supported opening the 1002 area to oil and gas development. The Coastal Plain is considered America's best onshore prospect for conventional oil and gas discoveries. Alaska depends on responsible development of its natural resources to support its economy. In fact, it wasn't until the discovery of oil that led Congress to finally vote in favor of Alaska statehood. Through the discovery of oil, Congress realized Alaska could have a healthy economy through the development of its natural resources. Oil production has been the economic engine of growth in Alaska. Even though the Trans-Alaska Pipeline is running at one quarter capacity, oil production generated approximately 80% of unrestricted general fund revenues in FY 2008. With oil production occurring today on the Coastal Plain, our economic lifeline could be operating at two-thirds capacity, sharply reducing Alaska's budget deficit and helping sustain public services that Alaskans depend upon. The oil industry, as you have heard, has demonstrated over the past 40 years that North-South energy development and environmental stewardship can and do coexist. Responsible oil and gas development in a small fraction of the Coastal Plain proposed for leasing will help Alaska realize the benefits that come from energy production. In addition to the many public services funded across Alaska by oil revenues, North Slope production generates thousands of jobs for Alaskans. On the North Slope and elsewhere, the industry and the jobs it provides has generated an economy, raised the standard of living, and has significantly improved the quality of life. I'd like to respond briefly to an earlier testifier. I'd like to point that the development would occur in the non-wilderness, the non-federal Big W wilderness of the Coastal Plain. Alaska has 90% of America's national parks, 84% of its national wildlife refuges, and over 50% of its federal Big W wilderness.
Mr. Portman?
I'll summarize very quickly.
Thank you.
So over 50% of America's federal wilderness, the size of Idaho, and not 1 acre of existing federal wilderness in Alaska would be touched by this development. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Portman? Okay, next individual is Cody Worley. Oh, that person looks like we've lost them. Liam Zolt.
This is Liam Zolt. Can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Well, hi, my name is Liam Zolt. I'm the Director of Technology at ASRC Energy Services. I want to thank the committee for the opportunity to be heard today. I just wanted to contribute the information that from a global perspective, the North Slope oil and gas community is a model of environmental responsibility. It's not comparable to other regions. For decades, it's been said that the wildlife on the North Slope has the right of way, and this will be no less true in Anwar. In contemporary times, as greenhouse gas emissions rise to the forefront, producers are focusing on lowering footprint and decarbonizing operations. The industry is capturing flare gas, waste heat, and optimizing transportation. The EIS found that Anwar development will not materially impact the carbon balance because oil is not an elastic product. Additional barrels produced in Anwar do not add very many extra barrels in end use. They displace other barrels on the market from declining fields. In fact, in this case, I think it will displace dirtier barrels on the market because Alaska oil is typically refined in California, where there's a higher carbon footprint per barrel than barrels produced in Alaska. So we have the opportunity to set the stage here for what responsible Arctic development is going to look like. We can do it, or other countries that have less of a legacy of environmental oil and gas production can probably meet. And so I think we've recently seen what the budget's going to look like if the revenue continues to fall in Alaska. So respectfully, Alaska needs Anwar. Responsible development is a good thing, especially when it's executed by remarkable corporate citizens in the Alaska oil and gas community. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. I hope I didn't go over 2 minutes.
Thank you. You didn't. You're helping us out here by finishing a couple seconds early. Any questions for the testifier? Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Zolt. Appreciate your testimony today. We're going to keep going on here. Next individual is Emily Sullivan.
Co-chairs Tarin Lincoln, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Emily Sullivan. I'm here representing Alaska Wilderness League. I'm here to voice opposition to SJR 7. The resolution states that Alaskans overwhelmingly support oil and gas development in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. I would like to remind the committee that there are many Alaskans who vehemently oppose such development. We have many members in state who care deeply about the coastal plain as a place of incredible ecological importance, a place of solace and recreational opportunity, and a place where uniquely Alaskan resources are protected. The Arctic Refuge is an iconic public land, and the coastal plain is its biological heart. SJR 7 is problematic on many levels. The resolution states that only 0.01% of land will be covered by production and support facilities, ignoring the fact that seismic testing, gravel mines, and pipelines will impact the entirety of the coastal plain. The resolution speaks to the estimated oil and gas below the coastal plain, but not to the ecological importance of it. The hundreds of species of migratory birds, muskoxens, wolves, caribou, and polar bears who rely on it in its current state. The resolution additionally makes no mention of the Gwich'in people and their historic relationship to the coastal plain, which they've held sacred for thousands of years. These major oversights are just a few reasons that we oppose SJR 7. I'd also like to express to the legislature that the coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge protects many unique resources that are more valuable to many Alaskans than the oil that may lie beneath it. The Arctic Refuge is one of the largest wild undeveloped spaces left in the U.S. It is one of the largest places. It is one of the last places where people still live in harmony with the land. To push development on the coastal plain for oil and gas development is a travesty on one of our most valuable and unique resources. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Do we have any questions for the testifier? Representative Rasmussen.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Sullivan. I appreciate your testimony. And I was just curious if you had listened to prior testimony with people from the region testifying in support because of a lack of jobs and what your group's position on that is.
I did, and we could follow up with you after. I cannot speak to that at this time.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to read the list of names in order here. We're at 2:42, going to try and get through. It's going to be Lois Epstein, then Glenn Solomon, then Mallory Prim, then Odin Miller, then Charles Lampke, Michael Jepperson, Matt Rexford, then Ryan Marsh, and then there's a couple other. We have one, at least one in the room. So I'm going to just kind of keep going, but wanted to let you know that's where you're at in the queue. Lois Epstein is next.
Thank you, Co-Chair Tarr and Co-Chair Lincoln, and good afternoon, everybody. My name is Lois Epstein, and I am an Alaska licensed engineer with the Wilderness Society and the organization's Arctic Program Director. Since the Wilderness Society's beginnings in the 1930s, our scientists and other staff have worked in Alaska to protect the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge from development. We recognize it as a place with extraordinary wildlife, wilderness, and subsistence values, and as iconic as other American landscapes such as Yellowstone and Yosemite. Not all places in Alaska are alike, nor are all places appropriate for oil drilling and industrialization. Had the provisions supporting drilling not been quietly attached to the 2017 Tax Act, where it needed only 51 votes to pass the Senate, the refuge still would be protected from development for future generations, and Alaska would not have a long-term black eye nationally and globally for what will happen to this iconic landscape. Many of us have heard that Congressman Young describes this proposed development merely as a dot on his nose, 0.01% of the entire refuge as it's listed in the resolution. That's including much more area that will not be, that is not part of the coastal plain. Actually, it will be more like a dot with an entire system of veins and arteries and organs attached to it, covering the entire coastal plain acreage. SJR 7 has many problems. It does not acknowledge the interests of the Gwich'in and the Inupiat people in protecting this area. It does not acknowledge the uncertainty in oil production, with BLM saying the amount on the coastal plain could be as low as 1.5 billion barrels. It does not acknowledge that the state's oil tax credits mean Alaska could be required to pay hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, in the development's early years to produce the oil. And these tax credits could go to big oil companies like BP, ExxonMobil, and ConocoPhillips to offset the taxes they would pay on their existing North Slope production. And as a reference for that, I would say see Sarah Longan of DNR's presentation to the House Finance Committee on February 27th, where she was talking about the National Petroleum Reserve, another development that was roughly the same scale
as what
we would anticipate.
My organization also
is extremely concerned that this.
Ms. Epstein, I'm sorry I have to cut you off because you've run over your time. Can you quickly summarize in one sentence?
Okay. So what the Alaska House does now will matter, unlike previous resolutions before the 2017 Tax Act passed. So thank you, and please vote now.
Thank you. Continuing on, next on the list, Glenn Solomon.
Awesome. Thank you, Co-Chair and Lincoln also. My name is Glenn Solomon. I'm an Inupiaq and a resident, a whaling captain, a hunter, a husband, a father, a leader of our community of Coctovid. I support the opening of coastal plains to oil and gas leasing. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on Senate Joint Resolution 7 today. It's important that the state stay on track with the leasing program. The coastal plain can provide significant revenue to the state and should be part of the future fiscal equation for the state. It is also important to our local government as a tax base that provides life, health, and safety to our communities that had third world conditions in our not too distant past. Improved water and sanitation in our communities have increased in life expectancy of the North Slope. It's only through continuing development that these services can be maintained. Coctovic is the only community in the 1002 area, and it is my home. I hope our respected elected officials in Juneau will listen to our voice when considering this resolution. I am from Coctovic, and I support oil and gas leasing in the coastal plain. Our people have experience with the balance of subsistence activities with industry, and we know that with this proper stipulation, exploration can occur that will protect our subsistence resources. We, like the Gwich'in depend on the caribou. We have the knowledge that the caribou and can coexist within industry. The porcupine caribou herd migrates through the Canadian oil and gas fields like the Central Arctic herd does on the North Slope. The Inupiaf and the Gwich'in are dependent on both of these herds. Yet the porcupine herd has been co-opted as a symbol to fight us and the rights of our lands and economic self-determination. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. Any questions for the testifier? Okay, then we will go to our next person, Mallory Prim at the Homer LIO. Ms. Prim?
Hi, this is Mallory Prim, and I'm commenting on behalf of myself and my community in that I oppose SJR number 7 for several reasons. I strongly oppose the wording that says Alaskans overwhelmingly support this oil and gas development because I do not, and my community here in Homer does not, and my community where I work in the summer as a guide in Denali National Park does not support this resolution, so I do not appreciate being spoken for and being misrepresented in that way. And I also think that the resolution doesn't give the appropriate weight to opening Section 1002 of the Arctic to drilling. I understand that people are saying there'll be such a small impact in a non-wilderness area of the refuge, but because an area of a refuge is not designated as wilderness does not mean it's important. It was set aside as a refuge for a reason. It's home to over 200 species of birds. 77% of the coastal plain is critical habitat for polar bears, and not to mention the caribou that other people have spoken for on behalf of. And I think that stating this 200-acre limit is a really low, narrowly defined estimate of how much will be affected, especially because that doesn't include pipelines, gravel mines, ice roads, seismic exploration, or areas that are supposedly reclaimed. And I think it's giving us the wrong image of what Alaska is. And I think looking towards the figures in this resolution of how much oil is out there and how much revenues is stood to be gained is inaccurate, and I'd like to see, you know, the figures where that came from, both the high figures and the low figures, so maybe we can get an average. With BP pulling out of its Arctic program in 2015, I think it sends a message that's a realistic risk versus the reward of drilling in the Arctic is that we should not be drilling in the Arctic, not just because it's not going to give us the promises of what the figures we have here in this resolution, but also because there are some things that are more important, and I think the value of the coastal plain needs to be considered in its intrinsic value of being wild protected land. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Prim. It looks like Representative Rauscher has a question for you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. I just have a question real quick. You said you were speaking for your entire community, and I was wondering how you qualified that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a community member, and that's what I'd like to stand on right now with my personal life. I feel like the voices of individual Alaskans should also be heard, not just organizations.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We're going to continue on. I think we can run over a few minutes, and I'm just going to do the best job I can at trying to get through everyone. Again, if you don't need 2 minutes, don't feel that you have to use it. Odin Miller is next.
Good afternoon, and thank you. I'm calling to voice my strong opposition to SJR 7. As a lifelong Alaskan, I find this whole thing to be an extremely raw deal for Alaskans in so many ways.
Mr. Miller, can you just state your name for the record, please? Pardon me for interrupting.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Odin, O-D-I-N, Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R. I live in Fairbanks.
Please continue.
Okay. The federal government will get most of the money from this development because of the 90-10 royalty split. More importantly, development of the refuge will cost the state millions of dollars because of oil tax credits. Can Alaska really afford this when we're already facing massive budget shortfalls and proposed cuts to basic services? Instead of passing arm-waving resolutions like SJR 7, the legislature should start by repealing SB 21 and making the oil companies pay their fair share instead of expecting handouts from the government. This resolution would have other negative consequences for Alaska's communities. Services in rural Alaska are already being gutted under Dunleavy's proposed budgets. Now villages in northeastern Alaska will also have their food supplies hit by declines in the porcupine caribou herd that would result from oil drilling. I fully support expanding subsistence rights on federal wilderness lands and removing some of the restrictions that rural Alaskans are burdened with. This is a separate issue from oil development. If the legislature is serious about expanding subsistence rights in federal lands, it should be passing resolutions to address this issue specifically, rather than calling for industrial development that would destroy wild food sources and lock local subsistence users out of the lands where development is taking place. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony, Mr. Miller. Any questions for the testifier?
I have one quick question.
Representative Rasmussen has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Miller. I just wanted to verify where you got the 90-10 split for the federal government and state.
Mr. Miller, we have the bill sponsor here, and so we can have them come up and answer that question as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Trevor Fulton, staff for Senator Birch, the bill sponsor. In the 2017 Tax Act, the split was actually defined as 50-50 state federal.
Thank you.
And just to be clear, on the leasing program.
This is Odin Miller. I misspoke. I meant the 50-50 split instead of the 90-10 split. I misspoke in my testimony. My apologies.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. We're going to continue on here. We lost Charles Lampe. If you're still listening, apologies. Next is Michael Jesperson. Jesperson?
This is Michael. Well, Madam Chair, this is Michael Jesperson, J as in Juliet, E as in Echo, S as in Sam, person. I'm calling in support of Senate Joint Resolution 7 and asking that you pass this joint resolution and encourage the federal government to continue on the path to leasing in the 1002 area of the coastal plain. You're not being asked to approve a specific development plan or a specific project. Those things may come later, and when they do, there'll be a specific EIS done for each project before the project can be developed to make sure it can be done so safely. We have, if there was an economical and viable energy alternative to carbon fuels available today, it would take a minimum of 60 years to build out the infrastructure for that fuel to be used. That means carbon-based fuels will be used a minimum of 60 years as the primary fuel and another 100 years as a secondary fuel. Alaska has the strictest environmental rules on the planet. If carbon-based fuels, mainly petroleum, are going to be used for the next 60-plus years, what better place to develop it than Alaska? We can ensure that it's done so properly. There will be less worldwide harm if it's done here where we can control it and make sure it's done right than if the oil is developed elsewhere. If oil will be used, where will it come from? Electric cars, most of the energy has come from petroleum. We need it. As legislators, you're currently struggling to find money with which to run this state. Should the 1002 area lease go forward, oil be discovered it and pumped into the pipeline, it's going to take roughly 20 years to get it flowing good. You won't be in the legislature anymore, but your future colleagues will have the same problems you do, namely looking for money to fund this state. Help them out. Pass Senate Joint Resolution 7. Help the state out. It needs jobs. Help the state out. We need revenue. And help the world out, because this will protect the planet better than producing oil elsewhere. Thank you and good day.
Thank you, Mr. Jesperson. Any questions for the testifier? Okay, last here in the queue, Matt Rexford, then Ryan Marsh, then Ron Yarnell, then Lisa Bariff, and then Kara Moriarty. So we're going to try to get through everyone. Matt Rexford, please.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. Co-Chair Lincoln, my name is Matthew Rexford. I'm the president of Koktovik Inupiat Corporation. I'm also a lifelong resident of Koktovik, and I am Inupiat. And I'm calling in strong support of Senate Joint Resolution 7. And
for reasons previously testified from previous testifiers, the development on the North Slope will provide the critical public services in our North Slope communities, and the life expectancy of Yuba people have increased by a decade since development began in Prudhoe Bay through improvements in healthcare facilities, public health services, education, poverty level, etc. I was born in 1985, and I was fortunate to attend Harold Kovulik School here in Koptovik. And so we see the benefits that come from the positive benefits that come from exploring and developing in the North Slope. And based on our experience on the North Slope, development and subsistence can coexist, especially in regards to the health of caribou herds. We don't see any reason why the Porcupine caribou herd would be any different than any other development going on to the west and in Canada. Development on the North Slope allows the state to fund rural development projects across Alaska. But there will also be development on the North Slope has some of the highest environmental mitigation and remediation standards for industry in the world, as previously testified. And I also wanted to state that the 1002 area, the Coastal Plain, was specifically set aside for oil and gas development. It is not and has never been designated as wilderness. And our people have footprints throughout this whole entire Coastal Plain. So I am calling in strong support, and I would like to also note that the tribal members of Koktovik, the federally recognized tribe, the native village of Koktovik, the federally recognized Indian Reorganization Act, Regional Tribal Council of the North Slope, are in support of developing the 1002 area of Anwar. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony, Mr. Rexford. Any questions for the testifier? Okay, going on to Ryan Marsh, please.
Hi there. My name is Ryan Marsh. I'm the Arctic Program Coordinator for the Northern Center. Madam Chair Tarr, Co-Chair Lincoln, Vice Chair Hopkins Committee, thank you for this opportunity to express my concerns over this resolution. Since this body passed a similar version of this resolution in 2017, the times have changed. In 2017, the Tax Act became real, and the federal government is now pushing the leasing mandate through as fast as possible. This resolution is no longer a statement of vision, but rather is an endorsement of a process that has been egregiously rushed and is an affront to the democratic process that NEPA was meant to protect. With a comment period that received no replies from federal agents for 35 days during government shutdown and public hearings held with less than a week's notice, nevertheless, strong and vocal opposition stood up and shared their stories across the North Slope Anchorage and here in Fairbanks. It cannot be said that an overwhelming majority of Alaskans favor drilling, and it's certainly true that a much larger majority of Americans wish to see the iconic refuge protected from drilling in perpetuity. Americans that are urging their representatives to vote for the Arctic Cultural and Coastal Plain Protection Act that Representatives Huffman and Fitzpatrick introduced to the U.S. House last month with over 100 co-sponsors to repeal the leasing mandate from the Tax Act. Do we really want to endorse a process as a state that makes us look so small and greedy to the rest of the nation? Are we really so poor as a state that we will sacrifice the heritage that our predecessors worked so hard to protect, and that we will sell off the caribou that the Gwich'in and many Inupiaq rely on to corporations for a few to get wealthy? How can we as a state fail to even mention the Gwich'in or the Inupiaq and their connection to that land when we advocate selling off their ancestral lands in this resolution? How poor are we? I urge you to withdraw this resolution and to work to build a more just economy and legacy for the future of Alaska. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Marsh. We really appreciate your testimony. And continuing on, Mr. Yarnell, Ron Yarnell.
My name is Ron Yarnell. I live in Fairbanks, Alaska. I've been leading trips across the coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge since 1976. I've led people on wilderness trips floating these wild rivers from all over the world, and the United States and Alaska. The coastal plain is a very special place. There's nothing like it all the way across the vast north slope of Alaska. This is the 5% of the coastal plain that we have any chance at all of protecting. A lot of us from Alaska live here because of the wilderness that's here. I don't understand why we keep trying to destroy these few protected areas, especially nationally significant areas. The global warming is causing the Earth to warm, and this is certainly one of the last places we should be looking for oil. There's lots of other places, even on the coastal plain outside the Arctic Refuge, where we could be looking for more oil. So as far as jobs, there's lots of opportunity for jobs elsewhere. I just urge you to vote against this legislation, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much. Possibly shortest testifier today. Appreciate that. Going on next is Lisa Barriff.
My last name is Barriff. I had a feeling you'd have a hard time with that. My name is Lisa Barriff. That's B like boy, A-R-A-F-F, and I'm representing myself and calling from Fairbanks. And given the short time, I have to cut out much of what I'd want to say because there are many things that I find problematic with this resolution. But I'll start with something that was said at the very beginning with, and I'm sorry I forgot his name, but it was Senator Birch's aide. Spoke to this resolution representing the 31st Alaska Legislature's official comment to BLM on the draft environmental impact statement. And if that is the case, I suggest that this not be passed and submitted as it is. The reason being is that the legislature was elected by and represents the people of Alaska, and this resolution and language included therein is based on a number of talking points that many of which are not accurate, but also does not represent the sentiment of a large percentage of Alaskans who wholeheartedly disagree with development of the coastal plain as the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Contrary to what is stated in the resolutions, Alaskans do not overwhelmingly support oil and gas development there. The 2019 Senate poll, Alaska Senate poll, I should add, which only represented those with access to the online poll, show that 55% of those who filled out the poll support drilling and 44% do not. As 50% is parity, I would contend that although 55% is a majority, it is but a small one. In addition, testimony given during scoping meetings for the EIS and the hearings on the draft EIS showed an overwhelming number of Alaskans are opposed to drilling in the Arctic Refuge, and that includes a number of us who have moved here, and I only moved here 18 years ago, people who were born here, those whose ancestors have been here for thousands of years, including the Gwich'in Nation and Alaska and Canada that unanimously oppose development in the coastal plain. The other quick thing I'd like to speak to is several commented that the caribou will not be impacted and use Prudhoe Bay and also the fact that the porcupine caribou herd passes through oil development in Canada as a way of saying that they will not be impacted on the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
Ms. Barriff, I need to ask you to wrap up, please.
Okay, I will just say that the coastal plain is a nursing ground and also very narrow, is a very, very different place, and potential impacts are related to the sensitivity of the species at the time of the impact. Thank you, and I urge you to vote no for this.
Really appreciate your testimony today. Thank you so much. Last testifier, and we will have gotten through everyone in the queue, is Kara Moriarty.
Thank you, and good afternoon, co-chairs Lincoln and Tarr and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kara Moriarty, and I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, commonly referred to as AOGA. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. Like most Alaskans, the oil and gas industry has long supported a leasing program for the coastal plain. This past January, a statewide poll conducted by a pollster in Anchorage showed that 64% of Alaskans continue to support development of the coastal plain. The Arctic National Refuge was expanded from 9 million to over 19 million acres with the passage of ANILCA, with over 90% of the region permanently protected as wilderness. In ANILCA, there is a section called 1002 that stated that a small portion of the coastal plain could be set aside for future oil and gas development. That is how the 1002 area came to be. It's actually a section in Anilka. The Tax Act limits development to 2,000 acres, as you've heard, and to give you a perspective, the Ted Stevens International Airport is 4,608 acres, over twice as large as the 2,000 acres designated. So why are we even talking about more oil and gas development? The U.S. Energy Information Administration that predicts by 2050, petroleum will still be the largest consumed energy source in the U.S., and the International Energy Administration has a similar prediction for global demand. So if the demand for oil and gas is still going to be there at least 30 to 35 years from now, why the coastal plain? The potential development of 10 to 11 billion barrels of oil in the 1002 area is the most significant oil potential in the United States. It is the largest onshore play on federal land in the entire country. Production from the coastal plain will continue to reduce our reliance on foreign oil, and predictions show that the coastal plain will reduce imports by almost $600 billion. The industry has a long history of safe, effective, and environmentally responsible development in the Arctic, and we believe this will be good for the country and will continue to build upon the over 110,000 jobs in Alaska and the revenues that we provide to the state for decades. So thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Any questions for the testifier? Okay. Thank you so much. So we did get through all of the folks that were signed up. We had 22 individuals total, 12 that spoke in support, or 55%, and 10 in opposition, 45%. So I was just curious how the numbers shook out. Also want to let folks know, if you want to send written testimony, please send it to house.resources@akleg.gov. Again, that's house.resources@akledge.gov. We will make sure that that's distributed to every member of the committee. On Friday, we're also going to be hearing SJR 7. It'll be brought up as a bill previously scheduled and heard. We're going to consider amendments. So we would respectfully request that you have those drafted by Ledge Legal, first of all. And then secondly, please have those to our offices by 1 p.m. on Thursday. So that'll help us just to be organized for the meeting. And if you have any issues with that amendment deadline, to please let Representative Lincoln or myself know as soon as possible. Also on Friday, we're going to have a confirmation hearing for Alaska Department of Fish and Game Commissioner designee Doug Vincent Lang. The commissioner will be present, I think, in the room, and we'll take the public testimony on that. And then previously, the confirmation that was scheduled for Friday, the confirmation hearing of Jerry Burnett has been postponed to Monday, March 11th. So we hope to have enough time for discussion of amendments and consideration of the resolution, as well as that confirmation hearing. If there's no other business to come before the committee, we will adjourn at 3:10 p.m. Thank you, everyone.